Christy Kay. Welcome to Business Life After Hours, a podcast that takes a deep dive into real-life topics at the intersection of business and life. After the workday ends, that's where we pick up. And now I have the privilege of talking leadership and life on location with Brendan Hunt, otherwise known as Coach Beard, on the outrageously popular series Ted Lasso. Well, thanks for being with us on Business Life 360 and After Hours.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about you and pay some homage to the young Brendan Hunt. Mm-hmm. Tell us about you as a child.
Yeah, this is all super hilarious. My parents got divorced when I was 2, and then my mom tried to raise me and my sister by herself, and that wasn't very easy. Gosh, I had to jump ahead in the other school. A very depressing time in Little League, which I thought Little League was supposed to be depressing because Charlie Brown depicted it that way, so I thought that meant I was doing it right. And then, yeah, around 7th grade or so, there was an announcement on the PA that we're, you know, I was in a 7th or 12th school, and they're doing the King and I, which meant there's going to be a lot of opportunities for the 7th and 8th graders because they need so many kids in the King and I. And good old Andre Robinson next to me said, "We're auditioning." Okay, thanks, Andre. Yes, from thence, I very much enjoyed the bug.
Little did you know, that was like one of those significant emotional events at that moment in time. Yeah. That was like a peak moment for you.
Yeah.
Took you on that trajectory. And luckily, we have you now, so there you go.
Yeah, despite being not particularly good in that show. I mean, you know, school plays, I think we did 2 performances, and I'm supposed to sing Whistle a Happy Tune, and No One Ever Knows I'm Afraid, but I whiffed on the lyrics, so it was very clear I was afraid. So the whole idea of the song was just completely blitzkrieged by me, but still, I thought maybe I'd get better later.
Yeah, and you did. So did you imagine a career in comedy? Like, as you started going through sort of after high school, did you ever think, okay, this is definitely what I want to be doing, or not so much?
Kinda. I mean, growing up in Chicago, you had the luxury of being very close to a lot of artistic institutions, and one of them is Second City, and I saw my first Second City show when I was in 8th grade, and it, you know, seeing improv for the first time just, you know, blew my lid. And then I saw really good Shakespeare at that time too. And so I just knew I always wanted to be performing. But the thing about watching comedy shows is comedy shows tell you, like, oh, you can write too. You know, when you're watching a play, it's like the playwright is somehow separate from the equation in a way as a viewer. But when you're watching a sketch show, it's always very clear, like, these people not only are saying this, but they wrote this, they made this. This didn't exist before. And it was never a conscious recognition of that, but it was definitely a molecular one, I guess.
And then as you transitioned more from writing into acting, how did that go? And was there somebody in particular who said, hey, come on over, let's go from writing to acting, more creating? No. Like, how did that whole thing come into play?
It was never really a transition. It was always, and that's the thing about being in sketch shows. And like, we had a sketch group in my high school after seeing Second City. It's like, you are already writing and acting, and I only rarely am I doing one or the other in the things I do. I've generally had the luxury of being able to do both, mm-hmm. which is by far the preference. It's never for me like, do you prefer acting or do you prefer writing? Like, I prefer giving all of myself to the thing.
All of the above. Yeah. And when you merge all that together, I feel like it's just a better product on the
It depends on who's doing
side.
It, but, but, you know, at the very least, it makes it more likely that the thing that was originally imagined here is what's going to happen out here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then when you started writing and co-creating Ted Lasso, mm-hmm. how did that process go? When you were sitting in the room, were you sitting there with Jason Sudeikis and you, or you just, do you write together? Do you write separately and bring it together? How does that process flow?
Well, first there was the commercial campaign we did in 2013 where Ted Lasso was sort of born, and it was me and Jason and our buddy Joe Kelly. It's been the 3 of us on the show ever since. And we literally, all we had was a premise. And so we just sat around Jason's pool and we're like, okay, well, this coach goes to England and then what happens? Oh, this, yeah, this. And we didn't even write dialogue. We just kind of wrote down the ideas. And then we went out there and we just shot these scenarios off this sheet of paper, much to the chagrin of this highly paid, very professional British crew who do not do things off the cuff in that way. And they were all crapping themselves. Fast forward to when it becomes a TV show, I mean, then we have a full writing staff. So it's, you know, the 3 of us and 8 other people. You know, like, Jason knows what he wants to have happen, but also he believes in sharing the ball. I mean, he's got a point guard mentality for a creator. So so we definitely want to hear from everyone what they think can happen. And that's the other thing about that comes back to sketch and improv is the best idea always wins. Like, it doesn't really matter who who had it. So, yeah, we put a high premium on making sure everyone speaks up and says their piece.
Did you, as you were creating the characters, did you pick then who was going to be in those roles? Did you have a say in kind of...
In the casting?
In the casting itself? Yeah. So you had to be so pleased. Like, when it's all, like, you're perfect, perfect, perfect. Every one of you is such an incredible actor.
Yeah, we really got very, very lucky, because we were in L.A. and the casting was happening in England, and we were just getting footage back, and none of us had worked with any of these people before. So we were just going on... were they right for the role? And then we fly out there to shoot, and it's like, well, I hope they're not all a bunch of and they're not. they're great. We're all, you know, we're all friends. We're done shooting, but we're all still in touch, and I can't believe how lucky we got with everyone being not just, you know, professionals, but good hangs as well.
Absolutely. And as you were writing, did you think, okay, these leadership lessons we definitely want to get across mm-hmm. to people, or was it sort of unintentional yet intentional based on the timing, how things kind of worked out, and you kind of went with that, as in, like, you know, certain leadership lessons?
More unintentional than intentional. I mean, you know, you put a thing out there, and, like, how people are going to react to it or what they're going to run with on it is not something you can control. We definitely wanted to make a good coach and a coach who cared about mm-hmm. people, and there were not great examples of American leadership at the time that we were writing this show. Part of it was reminding people, like, we're not actually obliged to be this, we can care about the people we're working mm-hmm. with and just want the best for everyone, as opposed to wanting the best for yourself, which was the worst leadership quality that was out there mm-hmm. at the time, I thought.
Right, I agree. Specifically, some of the message points, like loneliness and mental health mm-hmm. and those issues, certainly after the pandemic, they really hit close to home with so many of us who are watching Ted Lasso. One thing I wanted to remark on with you and leadership as it ties to Coach Beard is how well you portrayed sort of that quiet leader. It's like, you know, as a viewer, that you did your homework, you did your research, you knew the answers, but you didn't always have to be the first one in the room speaking. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is something that so many of us in the business world, maybe we appreciate, but aren't always that way. So is that kind of how you are as a person?
I'm a blabbermouth. I'm in terms of, like, words per day, I'm way opposite Coach Beard. But you know, it's another improv and sketch, you know, maxim that he represents, which is, you know, there's a school of thought that you should be watching the scene that your partners are in the show, and ask yourself, what does this scene need? And it may or may not need you to enter that scene. But that's Beard's whole thing. It's like, what does this life of ours need? Mm-hmm. It does not need talking. Ted's got that part handled. It does need someone to learn the rules of soccer on a 10-hour flight as quickly as possible. He just waits to see what is happening before mm-hmm. he acts and tries to fill in the gaps. And, yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's an essential part of a team.
Brendan Hunt, thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Being on Business Life 360 and Business After Hours. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Find success by your own definition at your intersection of business and life on my next podcast. Thanks for joining us. I'm Christy Kay.
Business Life After Hours is hosted and produced by Christy Kay. Audio engineering, production, and editing by Chris Pfeiffer. Business Life After Hours is a production of WGTE Public Media.